the button. "That you, Chris?" "Static. Yeah, Mrs. Dobbs said to contact you for information about the victim." I ducked my head to avoid the wind. "Well, get over to George Stewart's place by the dump and wait for me there. I'm pretty sure that's where he's headed." "Static. Roger that." I replaced the radio back under my coat. The trenches that Geo's boots had made continued down the canyon edge and arced toward the house. I followed as quickly as I could, but the snow continued to scour slick under my boots and the grade became slippery. I slid a little to the side in an ungainly split and then continued my descent, second-guessing my choice of leaving Henry standing there at the office. I was about halfway down the grade when I came to a second fence and a copse of naked apple trees crouched by a smaller path that led down the edge of the ravine toward the junkyard. Buried in the hillside across from the frozen idol was an old cellar door that must have been the exit from the clandestine tunnel, the spot where it had all started with an apple and a kiss. The drift was at least a foot and a half deep in front of the doors, and they lay there undisturbed like peeling gray gates to the underworld. I couldn't see the boot prints any longer, so I backed up, crouched down, and panned the beam of the flashlight across the surface of the snow. The only thing I could see were the craters where my boots had broken through the hard crust of the surface. I stood there in a continual riptide of flakes that traveled quickly across the polished snow. It was as if he'd disappeared. I peered at the cellar opening again. It was strange, but there was a relatively new clasp and massive padlock hanging against the door, one of those locks with the rubber covering to protect it. There was nothing, though, to give any indication that he'd stood there, unlocked and opened the ancient doors, or even continued in that direction. I turned the beam back toward the main pathway and caught sight of one snow-filled print that wasn't mine. He must have turned and continued down toward the junkyard. It was a narrow path, just wide enough for a man. There was a wooden gate about two-thirds of the way down, nothing that would keep anybody out if they were serious. The footing was worse than before, and I had to take my time, but soon arrived at the level space of the old quarry in the oldest part of the lot. I could date Detroit design by the surrounding stacks of automobiles, massive skirt-fender beasts from the bulbous 40s and sleek, high-finned quarter panels from the futuristic 50s. In the junkyard's protected environs, the wind had lessened and the snow was wetter, so Geo's tracks were easier to follow. I wondered why, if he was trying to make it back home, he had detoured here. I made my way down the aisles of stacked vehicles and had just turned the corner at a 52 Lincoln when I saw eyes looking at me from the gloom of dark and distance. I raised the maglight into two pairs of bronze iridescence. The mutt wolves had their teeth showing as they made their deliberate way toward me between the stacked automobiles. I had been the jolly fellow who had freed them from the depressing dump office and taken them home to be fed, but now I was an interloper that they'd found in their assigned territory. I made my voice stern. "Easy. Easy, Butch. Easy, Sundance." They showed no sign of stopping, and even though I despised the thought of shooting them, I couldn't run. I hoped that maybe a warning shot would scare them off and reached down, unsnapping the safety strap from my Colt and fixing my hand around the grip. At that movement, they froze. My hand stayed on my sidearm, and I spoke between the snowflakes. "Well, you guys are smarter than I thought." They didn't advance, but they didn't run either. I stood there for a moment and then shone the flashlight back onto the prints that turned a corner ahead and continued off to the right. I stepped forward, but they still didn't move. "All right, let's call this one a truce. You guys go your way, and I'll go mine." I resnapped the holster and made my way around the corner of the Lincoln. They continued to watch me. I made a cursory cast of the beam back toward the two dogs, but they remained immobile. Then I noticed that there were two sets of prints in this aisle. The new set were different from the junk man's, larger and with a more outdoor tread, an overboot of some sort, probably Sorrell's. For comparative purposes, I placed my rubber-covered foot alongside, smaller than mine, probably a 10 or an 11. I stayed to one side and followed both sets of tracks to another left. The snow was heavy now, but the wind had died. I looked up at the flakes that made me feel as though I were falling down, and saw that some snow had been swiped away from one of the doors of an old, slope-backed, mostly intact Mercury coupe. The door hung open, and I could see one of Geo's antiquated logger boots hanging from the sill, the extended length of untied cord laces drifting back and forth across the open window of the vehicle on which the Mercury rested. I hustled through the odd lumps of snow-covered junk and parts, finally resting a hand on the door handle of a partially crushed 47 Chevy that was at ground level. Geo was slouched forward with a shoulder firmly planted against the steering wheel where the Mercury's horn would have been if it had still had one. He wore the welder's cap with the upturned flaps, the double troughs having now filled up with snow. The condensation of his breath had frozen his beard into a solid mass and thinned the blood in it so that it seemed transparent and pink. Thin icicles stuck out from his downturned face like porcupine spines. I fed a fingertip into my teeth and pulled my glove off, wrapping my hand around the junk man's wrist. The flesh was blue, cold. He looked down at me with the remainders of a faint smile, but it appeared that the glimmer of life was gone from the rime ice at his pupils. It was also about then that I felt Sundance clamp his jaws into my right butt cheek. Chapter 6.
How's your ass?
I responded conversationally. Fine, how's yours?
Unperforated.
David Nickerson, Isaac's new resident, was on EMT duty and had just finished stitching up my posterior when Vic had barged in. I could feel the substantial breeze from the open door of the van and asked her to close it. She did and sat on the wheel well hump I'd occupied only 2 days earlier. Vic had gotten Geo Stewart's body loaded into Durant EMT van number 1, and it would appear that we were maxing out the available emergency vehicles for the area on a frozen and very early Wednesday morning.
You always provide us with the most pleasant environs for our work.
I try.
I guess I should congratulate you on finding an entirely new place on your body for scars.
Nickerson straightened behind me. He had applied a large gauze patch over my wound, or at least that's what it felt like under the dull ache of the local anesthetic with which he'd shot my right cheek.
That's it.
I pulled up my underwear and Carhartt overalls, the emergency pair I kept behind the seat of my truck.
You sure I'm not going to need any cosmetic work? That is my best side.
He smiled, and I took a few seconds to study the future of practical medicine in my county. He was a handsome kid with enveloping brown eyes and a comfortable face, one that I was pretty sure I was going to see a lot of in the future.
You sure you're old enough to be doing this stuff?
The smile held, and he nodded as he put away the tools of his trade.
Diploma and everything.
He departed, leaving the van to Vic and me. I pulled the sleeves up and shrugged on the shoulders, then zipped the front of the insulated suit and straightened the collar.
Geo?
Still dead.
She turned her boot sideways, and we both watched as the collected snow slowly slid off.
It looks like the rural Rasputin finally ran out of lives. From a cursory examination, they say massive coronary, but they'll know more once they get him back to the hospital.
I thought about it. Do you think the heart attack was due to the beating? She unzipped her duty jacket and studied me.
Difficult to say in all honesty, but if the man had stayed on the floor of the Dobbs' kitchen or even made it to cover, he might not be dead.
She took off her hat, ran a hand into her dark hair, and studied me.
Who the fuck knows why people do the things they do when they're in that condition?
She paused.
Actually, you would probably know.
I came around the gurney and started to sit, but then thought better of it. Well, there's the disorientation of having been beaten with a pitching wedge, but it doesn't look as though he was hurt that bad. I sighed. With the wind, it was tough going out there.
That, and the man is 72 years old, with a history of heart trouble in the family. Didn't you say the son died of a heart attack?
Yeah, but Isaac said Geo's heart was strong and that he didn't have the hereditary condition. He did have diabetes, though. I thought about it some more.
Why did he veer off and go to the junkyard when he could have just gone home?
She folded her arms. You just said it. Maybe he got disoriented out there in the snow. Or he was just looking for the nearest shelter. A 48 Mercury coupe with no windows?
It was quiet in the van.
I don't know. Maybe he thought he was going to the fucking drive-in.
Her head inclined as she continued to study me. I was getting irritated, and it wasn't her fault that she was the only one around to swipe at.
What are you smiling about?
You?
Why me?
She laughed. You really don't want to charge Ozzie Dobbs with aggravated assault, do you?
No. And I don't want to have to hit him with a manslaughter charge.
I put my hat back on and looked at her. Did you find any keys on Gio?
What?
I've got a hunch I want to follow up on, but I need his keys.
Her smile tempered a little.
A big ring of them. I took them because I thought we might need to lock things up.
What about the other set of boot tracks out there?
She didn't completely accept the change of subject, but let it pass.
It was Duane, says he was after the dogs, that they sometimes chase a rabbit and won't come back, so he walked out there looking for them.
I still couldn't feel anything behind me, so I snuck a hand around to make sure I wasn't half-assed.
Speaking of, did Duane let them out after me?
Yeah, he says he saw the flashlight and turned the dogs loose.
Where is he?
Outside of my unit. I thought you'd want to talk to him.
Boy, howdy. I can't believe he's dead.
People respond to the death of a loved one in different ways. Duane's was the stunned way. He sank quietly into the back seat, picked his stocking feet up, and then set them down. We had his boots, and the smell of his socks in the close space was enough to take the hair out of our noses.
You sure he's dead?
I'm afraid so. I was having a hard time sitting on one cheek because, even with the local, a dull throb was setting in. I took my hat off and put it on the dash of Vic's vehicle. I held her clipboard up so that I could make out the notes from her previous interview.
Duane, when did you come out here looking for the dogs?
He pointed at Vic, who was in the passenger seat.
I already told her.
Tell me. He sighed, and his voice sounded like a recording.
Close to midnight.
You turned the dogs out that late?
Yeah. It's the only place I can turn them loose that's fenced in, otherwise they run off. Check with Mike Thomas. They've been over to his place a bunch of times.
I flipped to the next page, but then let it fall back and looked at him.
Duane, I need to ask you something.
He continued to stare at the floor mats.
Yeah.
When I found your grandfather, your boot prints went right up to and then past where he died. Is it possible that you walked by him when you were looking for the dogs and just didn't see him? He began searching the inside of the vehicle for answers.
I don't know, I just...
He clutched his knuckles together. Duane, why don't you tell me what you were up to this evening? Maybe we can get a closer idea about the time if you tell me. He thought about it.
Gina and me went to the movies again in Sheraton.
You guys go to the movies a lot, don't you, Duane?
Yeah.
He scratched his nose.
When we got home, I drank a few beers and kind of passed out.
Vic and I looked at each other. I turned back to him. Passed out?
Yeah.
Gina woke me up when she went to work and then I let the dogs out.
What time was that?
He looked confused.
What?
When Gina went to work and you let the dogs out, what time was that?
She usually goes to work around 11:30.
He thought about it.
Yeah, it was 11:30. I remember looking at the clock.
You sure? His gaze came up, but didn't make my face.
Is that important?
Maybe. I put the clipboard down on the seat. Duane, I'm trying to understand something, and maybe you can help me with this. If your grandfather was trying to get home, why did he go to the junkyard?
His eyes finally leveled on mine, and he looked genuinely confused.
I don't know.
Well, his tracks led me down off the ridge to where the path cuts off to the junkyard. Do you know that spot where the apple trees are?
Yeah.
I waited. He looked uncomfortable and picked at a hole in the thigh of his coveralls. The quiet settled on all of us like a wool blanket, itches and all.
Is there anything else up there?
Nuh-uh. It was a quick response, too quick, as the cliché goes. Aren't those old tunnel doors up there? The ones that run out from the basement of the main house to where the cat house stables used to be? He wasn't so quick with the response this time.
Yeah, I guess.
I glanced at Vic, who clinched an eyebrow back at me quicker than Duane would have ever noticed. So why wouldn't your grandfather have just gone in the tunnel doors and made his way to the house and out of the weather?
Oh, those doors don't work.
I nodded and scooted farther up on my good cheek. Then why is there a brand new padlock on them? It took him a few moments to come up with something for that one, and when he did, it sounded like he had been coached.
Goddamned insurance! They said we had to lock it up so kids wouldn't fall in there and hurt themselves.
Can you get in the tunnel?
Nuh-uh, it's collapsed.
From the basement of the house? He picked at the growing tear on his pants.
Yeah, I mean, a little ways, but they're snakes.
Again, he sounded like the dead man.
Snakes. Yeah.
I looked at Vic and then back at him. In February. He looked at Vic and then back to me.
Yeah.
There was a growing glow of gold-tinged red with just a sliver of platinum in the sky as Vic and I stood looking off to the eastern horizon. The snow had stopped, but it was still diabolically cold and windy. I blew a thick pillar of breath and watched as it quickly dissipated between us. Sailor, take warning. She studied me.
Yeah.
Maybe our conversations were piling up in Nebraska after all. Gee, Vic, do you think Duane is lying? She smiled and stamped her feet a couple of times, shuffling her browning tactical boots and turning her full back to the wind.
As fast as a dog can trot.
I groaned, figuring this was the first of many dog remarks to come. Did you get a lot of photos?
Yes.
Print castings?
No, I did not haul plaster out there. It would have just frozen. We have his boots, and believe me, the tracks are his. The boots match the prints match the boots.
Fresh? She nodded.
We can look at them a little closer in the photos, but I'd say the timing works out pretty close to what he said in his statement. That part didn't change between my interview and yours.
She looked up at me from under the black rabbit fur flap of her bomber hat, which indicated that after 2 weeks of negative temperatures, she was now serious about keeping warm. She resembled Anna Karenina, the kind of woman that, if you want to kill, you have to hit with a train. I loved the way she looked in that hat, but I'd never tell her, because she'd stop wearing it.
I want to look in the basement. Do you want to look in the basement?
Yep. She glanced back at Duane, still seated in her unit and wondering what we were talking about.
He's not going to want us to look in the basement.
No.
We need a warrant.
I started toward her unit. Not necessarily. I closed the junkyard gate and locked it with Gio's keys. Vic drove us back toward the Stewart house and adjacent lodgings.
What did you do with the dogs, Duane?
I put them in the big house.
He paused for a second as he continued to stare at nothing.
I feel really bad about that, Sheriff. I didn't know that was you out there in the yard.
He looked genuinely sorry, and I felt even worse about having peppered him with questions about his dead grandfather. But there was something about that basement that he and the recently deceased weren't telling me. Hey, Duane, do those dogs have their shots?
Oh, yeah, tags and everything.
Well, do you think it'd be all right if we swung by the house so I could read them?
I really don't want to have to take those precautionary rabies shots if I don't have to. His eyes didn't make contact with mine when he responded,
Yeah, sure.
We drove down the lane and made a right.
You're not going to shoot Butch in Sundance, are you?
Vic glanced at me and I shifted in my seat. No, Duane, if I was going to do that, I would have done it when they bit me and not 6.5 hours after the fact. Vic and I got out of her vehicle, and Duane made a movement to follow us.
That's okay, Duane, I think we can handle it.
He flipped the passenger seat forward and kept a hand on the door.
No, I'd better come in with you. They mind Gina best, but they'll listen to me. I don't want them making any more mistakes with nobody.
I held the door, but kept it blocked with my body. You don't have any shoes. He shot a look down at his stocking feet, more holes than sock.
That's all right, I can just run into the house.
I glanced at Vic and shrugged. Okay. Duane hopped along in front of us, displaying a great deal of agility as he avoided the snow-covered junk in the walkway. He jostled the doorknob and called into the house,
Dogs!
When he swung the door wide, the two of them were standing in the entryway like twin sentinels. The place was just as dreary as it was the other night and still mildewed, which is truly a feat in Wyoming's high desert. It was warm in there, and I remembered thinking that it had felt clammy when I discovered Mrs. Dobbs in the kitchen. I suppose Red Hills Arroyo would be my next stop, breaking the news to Betty that her boyfriend was dead and that we were likely to charge her son with some form of murder. What fun! Duane brought the wolf mutts closer, and they were their old selves, smiling and wagging. I raised a hand, and Butch stretched his neck out to lap at it while Sundance stood just a little to the side and studied Vic as she closed the door behind us. I glanced at the basement door underneath the stairwell to our left and gestured toward the nearest hound.
All right, are you the one that bit me, you villain?
Duane interrupted.
No, Sundance always attacks from the front. If you were bit from behind, it must have been Butch.
And here I thought we were pals.
I reached under his muzzle and swung his collar around in order to examine the tags. They actually were updated only this year, and I decided that I could now continue with part B of my plan.
Duane, could I have a glass of water?
It tastes like ass.
I stared at him for a moment.
What?
He stood in the entryway, framed by the stained glass side panels that led to the dining room. The water here in the big house comes from the original well, and it's only about 60 feet deep. It's cold water, and tastes like ass. Vic turned her back, and I knew she was trying to keep from laughing.
That's okay. I'd still like a glass of water.
He started toward the kitchen, and the dogs followed, but he stopped when we didn't.
You want to come into the kitchen?
I looked down at the melting snow on my overboots and the filthy, thread-bedraggled carpeting. I don't want to track into the house any more than I have to. He acted as if he'd never heard those words arranged in that order before, shrugged, and then ducked into the kitchen with the dogs at his stocking heels. I stepped to my left and turned the handle of the basement door. Locked. I pulled out Geo's key ring and quickly flipped through the older ones, finally selecting the smallest of the skeleton type. Vic whispered over my shoulder, You dog, this is all very interesting for me. I've heard of things like illegal entry, breaking and entering, collusion, and inadmissible evidence, but rarely does one get to see all of it at one time in person. Just a little old-time law and order. Stick around. It's going to get worse. When I take a drink of the water, turn your head the other way and mumble help. She stared at me.
Is this the accessory part of old-time law and order?
Just put some feeling into it. I slipped the key in the door and unlocked it, opened and closed it, and then redeposited the ring back in my Carhartt's just as Duane returned from the kitchen. He held the glass out to me, and I couldn't help but notice that it looked yellow and smelled like sulfur. The sacrifices I made for my constituency. Thanks. I stopped just as I was about to drink and shifted my ear toward the basement door. Hey, did you hear something? Duane looked at me as he petted the dogs.
Nuh-uh.
Vic shrugged. I brought the glass back up to my lips and took a swig of what indeed tasted like ass. I swallowed and looked around, especially at the brunette. I thought I heard something.
Duane shook his head.
Nuh-uh, maybe the wind?
I looked at Vic.
It sounded like somebody crying for help.
The young man pushed his greasy ball cap farther back onto his head.
I didn't hear nothing.
Vic looked at Duane.